You're listening to a podcast hosted by Med Learning Group.
Welcome to our second of four podcasts on the management of uterine fibroids, hosted by Med Learning Group, titled Development of Novel Therapies for the Treatment of Patients with Uterine Fibroids. What are the data telling us? This series will be designed to meet the educational needs of US-based obstetrician gynecologists and other healthcare professionals involved in the care and treatment of patients with uterine fibroids. Our conversation today will address the disparities and challenges associated with uterine fibroid management among minority populations. I am Surabhi Dangi Garimella, Medical Director with the MedLearning Group, and I will be your host today. Joining me today is Dr. Erica Marsh, Vice Chair, Department of Obstetrics and Gynecology, Chief of the Division of Reproductive Endocrinology and Infertility at the University of Michigan Medical School. Dr. Marsh, thanks so very much for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me.
So to just kick off the conversation, Dr. Marsh, would you tell us a little bit about race as a risk factor in uterine fibroid development? Are there genetic factors involved in increased risk among certain populations?
Yes, I think that's an interesting and important way to kick off this discussion, particularly because, you know, what do we mean by race? Race is really a social construct. It's not something that is embedded in our genes. It's hard to talk about race and genetic factors because, again, we're talking about something that's a social marker of really racism versus a genetic marker. I think there it's important to talk about ancestry, which can be tied to our genes. And ancestry just literally refers to if we trace our lineage back, kind of what part of the world. What parts of the world do we trace our lineages back to? And that often is associated with certain genetic markers. So I think that we know that fibroids are without question more common in Black women, in women of African ancestry. We know that there are some general common genes that have been seen in many fibroids. I think the most notable one or the most commonly found one is a gene called the MED12 gene, which is found in individuals of all ancestral backgrounds and racial backgrounds. There hasn't been a Black fibroid gene that's been identified, and I doubt if we will find something like that. I think one of the challenges with fibroid research and one of the limitations of our understanding of the association of race per se and fibroids is the fact that we've done very little research as a field to really look at the impact of race. And again, the way we experience race socially is, and certainly medically is by our experience of racism. So that's a space where we need to do a lot more research.
Do you mind, I know that you work a lot more in the African-American population, but do you want to talk or touch upon a little bit of the other minority populations in the U.S. specifically? Do we know anything about, South Americans or Asians? And is that something you might, or Native Americans for that matter, is that something you want to address?
Absolutely. I think most of the research that's been done on fibroids has been done on white and Black individuals. There have been some large cohort studies that have included small numbers of Asian Americans and Hispanic or Latino individuals that have, because of the numbers of individuals in those cohorts, haven't necessarily been powered to show a difference in prevalence or cumulative incidence between those groups and other groups. I have seen, I personally have not seen any literature, unfortunately, on the prevalence of fibroids in Native American individuals who are born with a uterus. And so that's definitely an area that is screaming for additional research. I think there's a recent study that came out in JAMA Network Open, which showed that at least in Hispanic women, that there were lower levels of fibroid prevalence than we had previously thought, and in levels that are, you know, closer to that of white women. And we have some data coming out on an even larger cohort of Hispanic women, which I think challenges our sense of what the prevalence of fibroid is in that community. But I'll wait till that actually is out in the literature before talking about it more. I think the bottom line is that we need to do more research that is inclusive of all individuals born with the uterus, you know, women and gender expansive individuals. And we need to make sure that everybody's represented in the literature.
Do we know if there are differences in the pathogenesis of uterine fibroids among different populations? And specifically, do we know of fibroid symptoms manifesting differently among Black women when compared to white women?
Yes. So in terms of the pathogenesis of fibroids, you know, fibroids in general have a similar pathogenesis in the sense that a quiescent cell, whether it's a stem cell, you know, a myometrial stem cell, a fibroid stem cell, that research is still being done. But some cell in a quiet state starts to essentially becomes a fibroid cell, and that cell replicates, and those replicating cells lay down a disproportionate amount of extracellular matrix or fibrous tissue, which is where the more common name of or the less medical name of fibroids comes from versus the medical term leiomyoma. So I don't think that there's evidence that process is different between different groups of based on ancestry or race. There's some mechanistic or basic science studies that suggest or have found that there are certain factors that may be higher or lower in fibroids from certain populations. For example, there's work that's been done that shows that aromatase levels are higher in individuals that have self-identified as Black. But the overall pathogenesis of the tumors is very similar across racial groups. Now, in terms of the second part of your question, do fibroid symptoms manifest differently amongst Black women when compared to white women? I think, you know, symptoms are driven in large part by fibroid location and fibroid size, and certainly the number of fibroids that you have. And so to the extent that we know that Black women tend to have larger fibroids, they tend to have more fibroids, they tend to develop them earlier in life. Those are the things that impact symptom manifestation. So, it, you know, it's not that Black women have symptoms that other groups don't. It's just that Black women have a much higher burden of fibroid, in both in terms of prevalence, and in terms of you know, at an individual level, the uterine volume of fibroids. And so that does impact that tends to give Black women more significant symptoms than other groups.
So moving on to the next question. Research shows that a higher rate of surgical intervention, such as myomectomy or hysterectomy, is observed among Black women. Do we understand the reason for that? And also, are surgical outcomes different based on the person's race?
Yes, we do know that Black women tend to have, as you said, a higher rate of surgical intervention. I think what's been interesting is what some recent studies have shown in the last few years is that we know that when given the choice, so in systems where access to care is equitable, or access to care is logistically feasible and offered to the patients, that Black women tend to select uterine sparing surgeries or interventions more often than white women. Some of those studies control for age. Most of them did, not all of them. There's some cases where Black women, have symptomatic fibroids earlier in life, and haven't, want to keep their uterus because they want to achieve their family planning goals in terms of being able to carry pregnancies, or some women just want to keep their uterus because they want to keep their uterus. But we do know that when choice is available, that Black women tend to prefer uterine sparing procedures, like specifically myomectomies, which are procedures in which the fibroids are removed but the uterus is left, versus a hysterectomy, which is a procedure where the entire uterus is removed. I think it's important to note that, as we were discussing earlier, Black women tend to have larger fibroids. They tend to have more fibroids. So that can impact the type of these procedures, or the approach of these procedures, of surgical procedures, that patients are offered or select. And I think what's been another thing that's been an interesting finding in terms of racial disparities in particular is that even there's been some outstanding work on cohorts of women that are receiving care at the VA that's been largely led by Lisa Caligari and Jody Catan. So again, a system where access to care is presumably equitable, where it's shown that even in those settings, Black women are receiving, and when in matched conditions and matched patient cohorts that are matched even for uterine size, that Black women are receiving minimally invasive options less frequently than white women are. And so that's an important disparity to know, and it's a disparity that we need to address and understand why that's happening.
That's quite an important point that you bring, because I was going to follow up this question by asking you about, shared decisions that patients can make on treatment options and whether there's a racial difference. And obviously, you've just pointed that out. Thank you for that. And my last question is your take on improving fibroid management in the Black populations. Where are the gaps right now, and how can they be addressed?
I think that's an incredibly important question, Sarah B. And I think you actually just touched on a part of the answer in your last comment, which is really the importance of shared decision making. And I think it's a combination of that, but also really a keen and intentional a decision to center our patients in their own care. You know, there are models that we have of that exist, in models like patient-centered care or person-centered care or people-centered care. And I think all of these different models are really getting at respecting the patient's choice, their autonomy, making sure they're empowered and informed to make the best choice for them, making sure that they have the right support systems around them, making sure that they have the information they need at a literacy level that they need to make that informed decision. So I think, you know, again, centering the patient and their needs, their specific needs, so that they can make a decision that is going to be without regret, or at least minimizing regret, that in combination with that, you know, the role of shared decision making, listening to the patient, sharing, you know, your expertise as a healthcare provider, but you know, realizing that our role is not to make the decision for the patient necessarily, but to provide the patient enough information about their options, the risk and benefits of those options, and to help them kind of navigate to which of those options is going to be best for them, given their medical history, given their life goals, given their own kind of risk and concerns that they have. And so I think if we lean into that as providers, which many of us are doing already, but we can, you know, the more we lean into that, the closer we're going to get to providing equitable healthcare for fibroids. And I think, you know, when we move the needle for fibroid care with Black women, we're helping all populations. You know, we're moving the needle for fibroid care on everybody. So it's important that that's an area of focus for all of us, and that we're bringing kind of intentionality and authenticity to that.
That's all the time we have for today. In our third podcast, we will discuss the role of gonadotropin-releasing hormone, or GnRH analogs, in the management of uterine fibroids, and dive deeper into clinical results from new and combination GnRH antagonist trials. I would like to thank Dr. Erica Marsh for taking the time to speak with us, and thanks to all of our listeners for joining us. Make sure that you listen to all four podcasts in this learning series, as well as other types of CME programs offered by the MedLearning Group. MedLearning Group is accredited by the Accreditation Council for Continuing Medical Education to provide continuing medical education for physicians. This CME activity was planned and produced in accordance with the ACCME Essentials. A special thank you to Pfizer and Myovant Sciences, who provided an unrestricted grant for this educational activity. Have a lovely day.